Welcome to Pardes Daily, where you get your daily dose of Torah with Pardes faculty. This month, Pardes is bringing Elul to you. Let's dive in.
Hi, this is Rachel Berkovitz coming to you from Jerusalem. This is Unit 7 of 20, in which we're learning together all the Mishnayot of Masechet Rosh Hashanah. In yesterday's class, we started Chapter 2 of the tractate, and we saw that there were a number of conflicts that were happening surrounding the authority of the court in Jerusalem and the establishment of the calendar. And one of these came from a group of Samaritans of the Kutim that tried to mess up the torch, chain of torch command that enabled people outside of Jerusalem to know when the new moon had been declared. And now we're going to look at Mishnah Gimel and Daled 3 and 4, which is going to describe to us how this procedure of the torches worked. And that's how Mishnah Gimel opens. Ketzad hayu masim masuot. Right? The Mishnah opens by asking a question, right? In Mishnah Bet, in Mishnah 2, it said that at first they would light these torches. Now Mishnah Gimel opens by asking a question. How did they used to light these torches? What did this procedure, what did this ritual look like? And so, we know that it's something that's happened in the past. They used to do this. And we already learned in Mishnah Bet that it's been fixed and been changed, and they don't do it any longer because it used to get messed up. But we want to learn something about what it looked like. How did they used to do it? And now the Mishnah explains. Mevi'im kilusanot shel erez arukim v'kanim v'itzei shemen u'na'oret shel pishtan v'karuch v'mishicha. Right, some hard Hebrew words. Some of them don't even look like Hebrew. They would bring these kilusanot, which seems to be poles. And we find out these poles are made of erez, of cedar wood, arukim, very long poles of cedar wood. And they also, attached to them, would have like reeds or rushes, kenim, and atzei shemen, wood that is oil. Right. Some people actually say this is pine wood. Some people say, well, what's oil? That's wood. It's olive wood, some type of wood that has some type of like resin in it or something. And so they have long cedar poles, rushes and reeds, some other type of wood. Then they have this ne'oret of pishtan, which is some like type of flax, fluffy flax. And all of this was karuch b'mishicha. It was all bound together. It was all tied together with a string or with a twine. So what they're describing to us is how they made the torch, something very tall, I guess, which has a handle. And then it has like the shape of, let's say, like an earbud. So it's like a stick and then a fluffy thing on the end. So the fluffy thing is easy to light. Commentaries here say, well, this is some combination of things that are going to burn strongly, but are going to burn slowly. So I can have, right, I don't want the torch like burning off my hand. I want it to burn for a long time and burn well and strong, right? So this is how they made it, that it would do such a thing. And then it says, "Va'ole l'rosh ha'har u'machatz." All right, so this person who was in charge of the torch would take his torch up to the head of the mountain, to the top of the mountain. Here's our second use of the word rosh, right? Rosh can mean beginning, can mean first, but it can also mean top or head. Right, obviously head meaning head of a body, but here it's talking about the head of a mountain, like to the peak of the mountain, right? And what happens on the peak of the mountain with this torch? Umatzit behen et ha'or, and he would light it up, right? Or here doesn't mean light, or here means fire, right? Fire at night is how you got light. They didn't have electricity, so whenever you see the word or, it's referring to fire in the nighttime. That gives light. And then with this lit torch, what did he do? Umalich, umevi, umale, umarid. It describes the movements that he does with his hands. He's molich, like he puts it outward, like holech, going forward. Umevi, he brings it back. I'm doing this with my hands. Do it with your hands as well. Right? He puts it out. He brings it back. Maale, he raises it up. Umarid, and he brings it down. So he's doing some type of back and forth, up and down type of waving motion that he's doing. So it's not just that I see a fire, but I see the fire moving in this particular pattern. So I have one guy up on a hill doing this. In a moment, the Mishnah is going to describe to us what hills and how it works. And so I do that. And then I'm doing this motion, ad shehu ro'eh et chaveiro, shehu oseken barosh ha'har sheni. I'm continuing to wave my torch until I see the person on the next hill over, and he is doing the exact same thing I'm doing. He gets the signal. So I give the signal, and then he catches the signal. V'chen barosh ha'har shlishi, and so until the third one. And I think the implication of the Mishnah is so on and so on and so on the chain goes. Okay, so let's remember what's happening here. The witnesses have come. The Beit Din, the court has said, today is Rosh Chodesh. You weren't sure if it's going to be the 29th or the 30th. The 29th has happened. It's the 30th, the new month. It is. So on the day that was going to be the 30th, they declare it the first of the new month. And then that night, so where the night after Rosh Chodesh happens, the day was Rosh Chodesh, now it's the night after. On the night after, this guy goes up on the mountain and starts to signal to say, here in Yerushalayim, they declared it Rosh Chodesh. I want to let you know that this day that has already passed was Rosh Chodesh. And that guy gets the signal and he passes on to the next one, on the next one, on the next one. Okay, that is what is being described here, right? And this is what was disrupted. We, in our Mishnah before, we saw that this got disrupted, and you can now understand how it could easily be disrupted, right? Someone just has to give the signal at the wrong time or go on the wrong mountain a little over and give the signal at the wrong time, and you're not exactly sure how far away it is and what you see, and it can get easily messed up. You have to really... By the way, it means that the people on the mountains have to go up on all the possible nights when it could be Rosh Chodesh and wait to see the signal, right? And then if they don't see it, they know it hasn't been sanctified, and then they have to go back the next night. Okay, and now that was Mishnah 3. And now the next Mishnah is going to describe a bit more to us about this practice. And it says, Uma'ayin hayu masim masuot. From where? From what places? Right now, where? What were the locations that they did this? We know it was the top of the mountain, but which mountains did they light these torches? And now the Mishnah gives us a list, and it's a list of place names, which I will read to you, hopefully pronouncing them right, but probably not. It says Mehar Hamishicha Lesartaba, Umisartaba Le Grofina, umigrofina le chavran, umichavran le beit blitim. And then it's going to tell you something about what happens in beit blitim, but let's try to see if we can make any sense of what's going on here. It's actually going to be difficult. And it's going to be difficult for us because it was already difficult for some of the earliest sources, even from Eretz Yisrael, even from Israel, to understand where these places are. Where are these places? The first one, we have some understanding. The mountain where the Mishicha happened, the mountain where the anointing happened. And that, we want the first mountain to be somewhere pretty close to Yerushalayim, right? The court sitting in Jerusalem. And so this first mountain has to be somewhere in the environment there. And so where is the mountain where the anointing happens? What is the anointing referring to? Anointing of kings, anointing of the Messiah. Most sources understand this to be the Mount of Olives that is directly opposite the Har HaBayit, is directly opposite the Temple Mount, that is referred to as the Mountain of Anointing. I will point out that there is a link here with the word Mishicha that we had here and the Mishicha that we had in the Mishnah before it. The word Mishicha in the first Mishnah meant that it was tied with string. I tried to look up the etymology of these words. So you know that I care about language. And here I have the same two words. They mean different things here. One means anointing and one means the thread or the rope or the twine. I don't know if it's because the way you anoint a king or someone is you like put a wreath on their head in some way and then put oil. I don't know if the etymology is because of the shape. I could not find out what the Hebrew link of the etymology is. I would like, if anyone has a good idea, please email me of what the link between these words are, because it's not by chance that we have the same word one Mishnah after another, or at least every other place that I see that happen, I don't feel it's by chance. I don't know if the string unified all those different disparate pieces that I was putting into this one torch, and somehow the appointing of a king or the Messiah is going to unify the Jewish people. That's very drashy. I don't know if I like that. I just made that up as I was talking to you now. Anyway, I'm pointing out that similarity, but I do not know what it means. See, I do not know everything. So you're on the Hill of Anointing, which seems to be, we think that might mean the Mount of Olives. And then from there, that person is signaling to Sartaba. Now, Sartaba is a location that we know of that's on Evre Yarden, that's in the near the border in the Jordan Valley with Jordan. So that's pretty far from Yerushalayim. We know a hill with that name that goes back to the time of the Hashmonaim of the Hasmonean dynasty in Israel. And so many people assume that it's that place, but this is where things get to be tricky. After this, the names of the places were really not sure what they are. And as I think I said, the earliest sources in Israel already are not sure what they are or where they are. What also becomes tricky is that many people have looked at the relationship between Har Zeitim and the mountain that we think is Sartaba, and they've done all sorts of studies of the topography between one to another, how far away these mountains are, what mountains are in the middle of them. And it turns out that it's not really an unobstructed view from there, from one place to another. It won't work. It's too far, and there are other mountains in between. And so then that leads people to suggest that possibly these are sort of some of the main places. It wasn't just there was, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 mountains, but these are 7 stops along the way so you can get the picture of where this chain is going to. But really, there are lots of stops in between, and that it went from Jewish community to Jewish community. Obviously, you need a Jewish community living there. You can't have like one random guy living on the top of a hilltop, right? It has to be near another Jewish community. So that there were these mini stops between the way, and it wasn't a straight line. And I looked at scholarly articles that were trying to like name what those mini stops would be. So that's sort of one problem that occurs here. The second problem is after Sartaba, we're not really sure exactly what all these other cities are and where they're located. What seems to be clear is the direction that this path is taking is towards Babel, is towards to what we know of as Iraq, right? Is towards Babylonia. And that's interesting. Definitely there are Jews living in Babel, right? After the codification of the Mishnah, there's a massive Jewish community in Babel, and that's where the center moves to. So we definitely know there are Jews are living there. The problem is, there isn't any source that we have of, like, there are parallels to this Mishnah that give the list of these places and maybe add one or two other places, but there isn't any list of masuot, of a chain of torches going out to Syria, for instance. But we know there are Jews in Syria. In fact, in the first Mishnah, they actually talked about one of the farthest reaching places that the messengers had to go was to Syria. So how did they get, and definitely there are Jews in the north of Israel in that direction of Syria, that would need to be told about the new moon. So how did they get that information? Was it through Masuot? Was it only through messengers? And so that part, or did they have a number of these paths of torches going out that aren't mentioned here? So that part is unclear. And the second thing that is unclear is our Mishnah says that this happened till the Samaritans messed things up, and then they changed it to going to messengers. So when did that exactly happen? When did this all stop? And when did it change to going to messengers? And because when we read our first chapter and it talked about the messengers going out, it mentioned that even in the time of the temple, right, the messengers went out when there was a Pesach Sheni to let people know. So it sounds like there are messengers all along. So when are these Masuot happening? So then some people suggest, well, those messengers only went out on 6 months of the year, so the Masuot happened the other 6 months of the year. But then there's an irony, because the whole reason the messengers are going out, and they have to go out quickly, remember, we need them to go out quickly, so they can get the information of what the dates of the holidays are going to be, because it's going to take them 2 weeks to get to Syria, right? But if you did this Masuot chain, you'd get the information well more quickly than if you sent the person on donkey back or horseback. Right. So it seems like Masuot travel more fast, and that would be better to get the information. But maybe it's more dangerous because it can be messed up, as opposed to who knows what can happen to a messenger. And so there's confusion of, like, did these two systems work together and then we got rid of this system and just kept the messengers or what the relationship was, where, at what time period were these masuot. It seems the Yerushalmi has a tradition that it's Rebbe, right? Rebbe Yehuda Hanasi, who codified the Mishnah, who stopped the masuot, but the fact that there's such a lack of information about it doesn't seem like it was happening all throughout the Mishnah period. So I tell you all this to just say that normally I would like to know the true historical background of this. Here it's in a fog, but we can still appreciate the picture that the Mishnah is painting and the idea that the Mishnah is painting with it. So let's finish this last Mishnah Daled. We have the man on the top of the mountain signaling back and forth, up and down, till his friend catches the light, right? It's like, as if he lit the next torch, right? And then the next torch gets lit on the next mountain, and so on and so on and so on. And we hear the names of these mountains, and then we get to the Beit Blitin, and it'll be Beit Blitin, Lo Zazu Misham. And on Beit Blitin, they didn't move from there. And so here we have the same phrase. We're going to see this phrase in the, it's going to link us to the next Mishnah coming up. So we'll get there in a second. Right? He doesn't move from there. Ela molich u'mevi u'male u'marid. Now we have the same terminology that he's doing it forward and backward and up and down, right? He's doing the same movements. Ad shahaya ro'eh, right? Until he sees, and this is a similar phrase that we saw in Mishnah Gimel, until he sees, but in Mishnah Gimel, it was until he sees his friend on the next hill. But from this last Tachana, from this last stop, what is he waiting to see? Ad shehaya ro'eh kol hagola lefanav kemidurat esh. Until he sees the entire diaspora below him. And here I don't know the topography. Maybe it's is near the Euphrates River somewhere. Is that valley? So it's all below, and he's up high on the end of the mountain range. Until he sees the entire diaspora lit before him like a bonfire. Right, so it's gone chain of mountain to mountain to mountain to mountain to mountain, and then the last perch where I guess now the large Babylonian diaspora can see him, every Jewish community itself now lights a torch, and all in unison they're doing this movement to say that they got the information, until the entire diaspora is lit up with this light of the new moon. Right. And so here we have a really powerful, and it's clear the Mishnah wants to paint this powerful image, that we have this really powerful image of this Jewish light of the new month, of the unified calendar. Right. So if we're looking for unification, we have the technicality. We have the unification because I now know the month and I can celebrate it the way all other Jews are doing it. But I also have unification in the picture that it's painting. Right. That I'm outside. Right. And this Lahavdil, like to separate, but you know, you're at a rock concert and everyone lights their lighters and swings them, and this powerful feeling of being in a large group all doing the same thing, right? So there's also the actual experiential feeling of unification, of them all lighting these torches at the same time and having the chain go back to Jerusalem and being part of that chain of tradition. And so here we have this beautiful imagery painted for us in the Mishnah, right? That the witnesses and all of Am Yisrael look to the sky to see the new moon. And but in the diaspora, on the day after I look to the sky to see the new moon, then I look towards the hills that can connect me in a chain towards Jerusalem. And all of us are looking at the powerful fire that we're burning together in our unification and the solidarity of being linked to what's happening to the Jewish people in Jerusalem. And so here the Mishnah pounds, despite the fact that we opened up by finding out that there's a really discord amongst the Jewish people, it paints an incredibly powerful picture of rituals to try to create unification amongst the Jewish people.
Thank you to our Pardes faculty. And thank you to you, our learners. Make sure to check back in at the beginning of each week to stay on track with your Elul learning. And visit www.pardes.org.il for more information about Pardes and our programs.